Call to order the House Committee on Healthcare for Wednesday, 4th of March. Explain that, I'm sorry we've been delayed an hour, but the debate on the clean fuels program is still going on. There were still seven people in line to speak when I left. My intention is to move most of the agenda forward, and I'll do that first, and then there are some folks from out of town. I'd like to open up at least one hearing, as long as I haven't been called away, and take testimony from, I hear some folks from Medford have driven up. That's a heck of a long way to be disappointed. So let me, Sandy, which of these do I want to move forward? What's the?
Well, this would be the one that you're going to open up for the folks from greater than 100 miles. And you can, the rest, can you can make an announcement however you see fit.
Do them one at a time?
Yep.
The work sessions. Well, first, let me move a work session on House Bill 2825 to the Friday's agenda. Let me move a work session on House Bill 2541 to the Friday's agenda, and move a work session on House Bill 2560 to the Friday agenda. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2636. And Madam Administrator, what have we got with this bill, please?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2636 prohibits the Oregon Health Authority from issuing identification cards to applicants if the attending physician has already issued 450 or more individuals a registry identification card, allows for an exemption process to be developed by OHA. And we have two individuals that have traveled greater than 100 miles on the bill.
Will you call them to testify, please? I think all the witnesses that have testified are in opposition to the bill. Is that right?
A couple of them are just on the cusp. Yeah, sure. They just, okay. Yeah. Dr. Sharma. And then Melanie Berniscus.
Please identify yourself when you begin testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dr. Sharma, and I'm here today opposing House Bill 2636. I think that it would lead to a great hardship for patients throughout Oregon. You've got a minority of physicians that see almost 80% of the patients through the medical marijuana program. We already comply with additional documentation, which we are happy to do. But for those almost 55, 56,000 patients to be able to actually find a physician who is willing to do medical documentation would be a fairly grave hardship. And if those patients have to switch over and go from medical marijuana program to the recreational program, majority of patients are on a fixed income, and the cost would also be prohibitive. That's really pretty much what I came to say. If you have questions, I'll be happy to entertain.
Is it your impression that the doctors who issue a large number of licenses do it in a pretty standard way? I mean, that they really examine the patient and...
Well, I mean, the Oregon Health Authority has us comply with history and physical form. On my part, I'm happy to do that. I don't really speak to a lot of the other physicians in terms of, also access. I mean, nowadays, patients that are part of the medical marijuana program are able to get their medication for free, whereas... if they're not going to be part of the program, they're going to be paying quite a bit in terms of fees, taxes. And like I said, almost 60% of patients are on a fixed income. They're getting some kind of support through either the Oregon Health Plan or, in terms of for their fees. So in terms of evidence for, people being on such a fixed income, to not be able to afford being a recreational patient.
And if they find a grower, they can arrange to get it done by a grower without fee.
But they still have to be...
under the medical program.
Under the medical program, correct.
Great. Yes, please.
Hi, my name is Melanie Barniskis, and I did come up from Jackson County because I am one of the patients that was just referred to. I have diabetes, neuropathy, gout, and last July I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I have been using marijuana to mitigate these conditions, and now I find out I see 13 people in the state of Oregon who have an MD or DO after their name. Of those 13 people, 13 agree that I am a prime candidate for medical marijuana, given my medical condition and everything else. Zero out of 13 will sign for my card because they all work for organizations that receive federal funding. And the way they explained it to me, if they sign for my card to use medical marijuana, the federal government will withdraw the federal funding from their organization. So even though I see and have been examined by and have had hands-on with 13 people that could sign my card, none will. I still have to go out to one of these other doctors who is willing to sign, take a look at my records, go through an additional medical procedure to qualify for the medicine. Now, next year you tell me I have to go lotto. When it's time for my card to renew, I have to look somewhere in the state of Oregon for some doctor that hasn't already signed for 450 cancer patients? Please tell me you're not going to force me to do this. Tell me that this is not the nightmare I'm foreseeing. Because with my 13 doctors worth of documentation, I don't want to have to go to Portland to find one guy who will put his name on a piece of paper. Please don't make that happen. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
That's a powerful statement. I appreciate it. Thank you both. Looks like we have time to call some more.
Sure.
Until I get called away.
Yeah. Are you watching on TV still? Thanks. Okay. Just go down the list, sir.
Yeah.
Cheryl Smith, Leland Berger. One more.
One more.
Carrie Vandenberg. Okay, please.
This is way more interesting than listening to the debate on the floor.
Chair Greenlick, it's a pleasure to see you again. My name is Leland Berger. I'm a lawyer. I helped draft the Medical Marijuana Act and the Measure 91, and my law firm is Oregon Cannabis Compliance Council, LLC, in Portland. I wanted to follow up on what the physician and the patient you just heard from said and explain why it is that physicians are unwilling to participate aside from the federal funding, or sometimes they're affiliated with a religious hospital that precludes their participation. And I want to preface that by saying, although a few number of physicians have qualified most of the patients, the last time I looked, about one in three Oregon physicians has signed an attending physician statement on behalf of the patient. But the reason why physicians don't is twofold. First of all, the training and education on the endocannabinoid system, on the therapeutic uses of medicinal cannabis, is still not happening in medical education as a part of the schooling that physicians get. Secondly, and I think more significantly, is the fact that physicians are concerned that if they qualify medical patients, that they'll lose their ability to prescribe for their other patients. As I think you're aware, the B on the bottom of the prescription form is their DEA number that the Drug Enforcement Agency regulates prescription medication, and it turns out that that's a false fear. So one recurring fact pattern in my practice, in my law practice, is I go with my patient and I meet with their physician and I let them know about Marcus Conant, who was the head of the California Medical Association, who woke up one morning and said, you know, after Barry McCafferty had come to California and pronounced it all as Cheech and Chong medicine and threatened to take away the licenses of physicians who participate in the Compassionate Use Act there, he woke up and he thought to himself, you know, a physician counseling a patient on whether to use cannabis therapeutically really isn't that different functionally from a physician counseling a patient on whether to take a fetus to term or not, and that it's really about a physician's right to free speech. And the ACLU, on his behalf, went into court in the Northern District of California in San Francisco, into federal court, and successfully enjoined the federal government from interfering with physicians who were recommending cannabis to their patients. the government appealed, and the Ninth Circuit affirmed, and the Ninth Circuit said not only do patients have a First Amendment, or do physicians have a First Amendment right to free speech to give this information, but patients have a right to hear this information from their physician. The government sought a review by the United States Supreme Court through a petition for writ of certiorari. The writ was denied, which means it's the law within the Ninth Circuit, which is includes Oregon. However, there hasn't been any widespread notification about this through the Oregon Medical Association or otherwise. Physicians don't know, and that's at least part of the problem. And I know that there is a concern that certainly I inferred from your inquiry of Dr. Sharma that there was a concern, you know, are these, you know, mills that are just processing people? I know that the health authority has required additional rules, and I think Ms. Smith is going to speak to that for people who are signing for more than 500 patients. One thing you might think of doing with this bill is turning it into a vehicle for further regulation of these clinics. I mean, we've been doing the best we can. I'm primarily a criminal lawyer, but we've sought out attorneys who are in the healthcare profession to help advise about the procedures and protocols, especially in 10, 15 years ago in the early days. But, you know, to the extent there are concerns, I think they could best be addressed through, and I know I'm not alone in thinking this, they could best be addressed through regulation rather than through, you know, saying, providing a cutoff number like that. So that's what I came down only from Portland to let you know, and I appreciate your hearing my testimony.
Great. Yes, please.
Chair Greenlee, my name is Cheryl K. Smith. I'm a founding member of Compassionate Oregon. I'm vice chair of the Advisory Committee on Medical Marijuana, and I was the executive director of Compassion Center, a Eugene Medical Marijuana Clinic, for 4 years. I'm testifying in opposition to House Bill 2636 because I believe it's harmful to patients, like people before me have said, and it duplicates somewhat what's already in place under the current administrative rules. I have included that administrative rule that covers it in the testimony that should be in OLIS right now. Because a majority of Oregon physicians do not participate in the OMMP, limiting those physicians who do to 450 patients would have the effect of preventing many patients from obtaining a medical marijuana card. And we just did the math on this, and we figured out it would take 106 or 107 more doctors each signing for 450 patients to make up for this kind of limitation. So what do you do about the terminal cancer patient who's referred to a medical marijuana clinic by her oncologist who had the bad luck to get diagnosed later in the year after the doctor had already met her quota? Or the VA patient who's only allowed to use medical marijuana and still receive his VA health care services if enrolled in the OMMP? There has to be a better way. I'm aware of concerns that not everyone who's currently in the program belongs there and would be more appropriately served by the Measure 91 program. And I've also heard comments regarding the legitimacy of medical marijuana clinics in general. As a former attorney and health information management professional, I believe that a better way to resolve these perceptions is for the OHA to provide further oversight and regulation of medical marijuana clinics. This is something I suggested as a member of the ACMM at least once, and I was told it was beyond their purview. So I urge you to take this opportunity to amend House Bill 2636 to include the following requirements for medical marijuana clinics. One, proof of liability in workers' comp insurance and operation as a registered business within the Secretary of State's office. Permanent office location, written policies, procedures, and employee handbook. Confidentiality policies regarding patient information and a plan for storage of medical records once a clinic closes. No more than four patients seen per hour by one doctor, because the rules right now require a thorough physical exam. And then an audit of medical records to verify that that thorough physical exam was performed, that a qualifying medical condition exists and the doctor reviewed the medical records. Documentation that risks and benefits were explained to the patient or parent guardian. Documentation of follow-up care, including referral back to the attending or referring physician. These are all covered in the statute or the current administrative rules.
You've got those in the
Yeah, I attached those. It's OAR333-008-0060. That procedure, if you, a doctor's seeing more than 450 patients, there are certain criteria they have to meet. There's also an exemption in meeting these criteria if the clinic manager, which was me at the time, sends a letter and provides evidence that, in fact, all these documentation requirements are being met. So when I was the director at Compassion Center, I requested this repeatedly over probably a year. They ultimately got the Office of Healthcare Regulation and Quality Improvement, which is also a part of the OHA, to come in and do that audit. So they came in and audited our medical records, and then we were exempted from having to photocopy as much information. So there's a precedent for doing this kind of audit. In conclusion, I believe that we can and should continue to improve the OMMP. This bill, with the changes I've proposed, along with HB 2821, would be positive steps towards a smooth transition of medical marijuana into mainstream health care. And I think that is where it will go, and I hope that they will start teaching cannabinoid medicine, endocannabinoid medicine to the doctors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Carrie Vandenberg, and I represent the Aurora Clinic. We're a clinic out of Portland, Oregon, and we are created specifically to help patients with the process of obtaining their medical marijuana cards. We are not a collective or a distributor. The Aurora Clinic was started by a palliative care doctor and a psychotherapist. After many years of practice in comfort care, Dr. Patrizio, one of the founders, he came to believe that medical marijuana offered medical properties that could not be obtained by opiate-based pain management. He and Dr. Donaldson, the psychotherapist, were frustrated by the difficulty that their patients had in understanding the process and obtaining medical marijuana cards. Dr. Patrizio and Dr. Donaldson established the clinic to help patients who wish to explore medical marijuana as a possible alternative to pain management, with opiate-based options reaching their limits. The voters of Oregon decided that the citizens should have access to marijuana for medical purposes. This was a godsend to chronic pain patients who have reached their limits of tolerance and their opiate-based medical regimen. House Bill 2636 attempts to restrict patients from obtaining their medical marijuana cards only from their primary physicians. While this is intended to, is a well-intended attempt to keep patients closely involved with their primary care physicians in the process of treating their chronic pain, cancer, seizures, and glaucoma, and various other ailments, the bill would have some unintended and unfortunate consequences. Many primary care physicians, as we have already gone over, do not have the knowledge of medical marijuana or the expertise with chronic pain and other disorders to treat by medical marijuana or feel comfortable in signing for medical marijuana cards. Still, other physicians work for organizations, as this has been gone over as well, that do not allow them to sign for medical marijuana cards. This bill would deny the substantial group of patients that that have the option of medical marijuana cards as part of their pain management. These physicians need the expertise and experience offered by organizations like the Aurora Clinic as a referral source specifically for this purpose. House Bill 2636 would essentially eliminate the option of physicians who are specialized in this important field. It would also eliminate organizations such as the Aurora Clinic. For these reasons, very important reasons, we strongly urge that legislators do not restrict chronic pain patients of Oregon from access to medical marijuana. House Bill 2636, while well-intentioned, is a bad bill for citizens of Oregon who suffer from chronic pain, cancers, seizures, glaucoma, AIDS, and various other ailments.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for coming. This is your first time testifying?
Yes.
It's fun, huh? Sort of.
That's why I wrote it all down.
We have one more witness on this bill. I'm going to also open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 302 and call one witness, and we'll have two folks up here.
Great. The final witness for 2636 is Peter Kramer. Okay. And the next for 302 would be Alex Scheibel.
We'll call Senator Garrity in when we do a work session on it so he can testify. He was on that list as well.
We'll call him later.
Go for it.
Thank you, sir. Ma'am. Peter E. Kramer, part of the Mercy Center, executive producer of their television show. We're here to help patients in getting their medical card, in establishing a garden, meeting other patients. I started this 15 years ago with the thing. I think it's a joke that a patient has to pay a fee to have the medicine. My doctor, my primary physician, the first 4 years, she was able to sign for the medical marijuana card. Unfortunately, I don't have to pay as much as the other people getting the card because of being on SSI and that. Then I went to see Dr. Lebeck. I've seen him several times and even worked at his house doing maintenance there. He was a good gentleman. And we're lucky we had him here. He's dying up in a hospice now. He's 92 years old, a veteran. He served with my uncle. It's a recommendation that the doctor's giving to have a patient use cannabis as a medicine. I made up a healing oil. I have chronic pain, carpal tunnel. I use that. I share it with other patients that in different skin cancers and that. You really have to think this one out. You're causing patients not to get the medicine that they need. The medicine that the doctors give you from the pharmacy have very lot of side effects that would hurt you more than what you're originally going for.
Yes, that's true in a lot of cases. I guarantee you we'll take this very seriously.
I appreciate you listening to us, and please pass out the word. If you would like to get a cannabis connection, I would be happy to bring that over for you.
We have lots of connections, I'd say, more than I want.
Well, this is a newspaper. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I close the public hearing on House Bill 2636. Do we have a witness on?
Yes.
Senate Bill?
Alec. Your turn. Member of the committee.
The whole damn committee.
I know. Senate Bill 302. Modifies the definition of dental hygiene to include, but is not limited to, certain specified services. Specifies that the definition of dentistry and dental hygiene is to include prescribing, dispensing, and administering prescription drugs for certain conditions and services. This has an emergency clause.
Chair Greenlick, Alex Scheibel for the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association. Senate Bill 302, I'll be real brief. It's an very important cleanup bill. What happened in 2013 is the legislature passed a bill allowing teachers to administer and dispense EpiPens. So as healthcare professionals, we went to the Board of Dentistry and said, hey, that would be an important thing for expanded practice dental hygienists to carry EpiPens, and everybody agreed. And we thought we were moving through the rulemaking process. And then a letter from an assistant attorney general said, well, back long ago when we passed the statutes, we never actually authorized hygienists to prescribe anything.
The expanded practice.
Yeah. Or, correct.
That's right, we did not.
And so this is basically, they put temporary rules or in rules in preventing prescriptions of fluorides and antimicrobes. What this bill does is it fixes that. It makes it clear that there's statutory authority for dental hygienists. One step further, it makes it absolutely clear for dentists that they also have that authority. So that's
great. Sounds simple. Well,
okay.
It came over. Was there much controversy in the Senate?
No, it came over unanimously.
So we shouldn't have much problem with this.
Great. Thank you.
Well, that's great. We actually got something done today. Thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 302. Have I done everything I needed to do?
You've done everything we can do.
Good. We are adjourned. I am adjourned.
You are adjourned. And they're still talking.
You're still talking.
And they're still talking.
You're still talking.
You are adjourned.